Welcome to another episode of Girls on Film, a podcast where ladies talk about movies. This week, we have a highly entertaining interview with the two leading men from Set Fire to the Stars, Kellan Jones and Elijah Wood. Based on true events, Elijah Wood stars as John Malcolm Brennan, the New York academic who brought Dylan Thomas to America. Actor co-writer Kellan Jones plays the volatile celebrity poet, tormented by anonymity, alcohol, and the abyss, who scandalized the Manhattan literati of the 50s and challenged Brennan's hero worship of his work. In the face of the Welsh poet's wilder excesses in the Big Apple, Angel, Beast, and Madman, John had no choice but to hijack Dylan to a private retreat to get him ready for America. The days and nights that follow will change his life forever. Part literary biopic and shot in cut glass black and white, part love letter to the American B-movies of the 40s and 50s, Andy Goddard's debut feature is both a character-driven chamber piece and a cautionary tale about the flytrap of meeting your heroes. Take a listen to our roundtable interview with Kellan and Elijah. Enjoy.
We'll go ahead and start.
Break the ice.
Yeah. Have either of you ever met one of your idols only to be let down?
Happy to say I haven't. I have not been let down. I think I have a relatively healthy amount of realistic expectations when it comes to meeting people, I think. I don't build people up too much and expect them to exceed or meet those expectations. I have a relatively realistic perspective. So yeah, no, I've never been disappointed terribly. I mean, I've certainly met people I didn't care for.
Yeah. But
I didn't think I would care for them when I met
them. Yeah, they were,
it was fine.
Yeah, they weren't your idols.
Not at all, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so disappointed with you. Front door salesman. Yeah. I was really looking forward to this meeting.
He's a bastard.
Yeah, I hate him. Yeah. Awesome. But I know I've never thought of that or I met some wonderful people. I suppose I've got a huge imagination, so I remember as a kid always being disappointed wherever I went because it always seemed like better in my mind.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like Willy Wonka's. But no.
So I want to ask you guys, did you ever have a friend who fell apart with alcohol and drugs? And I mean, maybe not to that extent, but yeah. Have either of you known someone like that?
I've known people who have definitely had their finger on the self-destruct button, and I think Dylan's behaviour, yes, there's booze in the equation, there's drink in the equation, of course, but there's also people in the equation and whoever he's around, and that scene in the movie where Dylan says all those rude limericks in Yale. He's sober at that point. He's been drunk and he'll get drunk after it, but at that point he's sober and he's sticking up for John. So his behaviour wasn't just always dictated by booze, but definitely in some certain surroundings or when there was unfairness in play or an expectation in play. I've known people who definitely had their finger on that pulse where they might just take it a bit too far.
Yeah, I suppose I have too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one where it seemed like they were spiraling out of control, but certainly people that like to have a very good time and would mix drink with a gregarious personality, you know, could be very entertaining until it's not, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because so many child stars, you know, fall into that trap.
Sure.
Who didn't?
I did not, no.
It's good. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. Don't deserve a medal or anything.
Do you have any vices?
Just being relatively
any vices
stable.
At all?
Not really.
God, you seem... I know, I watched a lot of interviews.
I mean,
you seem so stable and happy, and you love your mom.
Yeah. Those are all true things. Yeah.
You sound horrible. Yeah.
So boring.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
No, but it's the angriest man in the room is the one that's most remembered, isn't it? And, you know, bad behavior sticks and all those sort of things. And, you know... You're just a cool, easygoing guy.
Well,
thanks. Yeah. But, I don't know. It must be hard, man. People have pressures everywhere, though, don't they?
Well, geniuses are usually self-destructive, or I'm generalizing too much, but they can be.
Certainly linked to it, yeah.
So when you studied your characters, both of you, was there something positive that you learned from the real person?
Some positive. I came out of the process with a great love for the man, the human side of Dylan. You know, I love the way that he would walk into a room and sees. You know, he wouldn't just see a waitress, and he wouldn't just see, you know, two old ladies, and he wouldn't just sort of see a drunk at a bar. He'd see hope and dreams and passion and feeling, and a story. And someone to listen to. And he used to say you went to the pub to talk first. So, you know, I definitely came out sort of enlightened by playing Dylan and doing the film that we made of the sort of person that he is. I'm a genius and self-destructiveness. You know, the thing about we know that, but geniuses are well known, aren't they? You know, but I suppose there are people and working in all kinds of different areas that might have those sort of traits, but I don't know. Is it about asking questions? I don't know. Is it about discovery? Is it about looking for answers and getting closer to a sort of personal truth that kind of creates some sort of bad behavior? So I don't know. It's an interesting kind of debate, really. Mm. But I definitely took something away from our mad ride.
Oh yeah,
that
certainly.
We went on.
Certainly,
yeah.
Our 18 days in Swansea, Wales.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know that?
We shot in 18 days. The film.
Wow, that is a tight schedule.
Yeah, oh yeah. Especially when it's all dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was intense.
What was it like smoking all those cigarettes?
Wow, there's a real story there. I'm a smoker, so Cal smokes on occasion.
Aha, vice.
Occasional, yeah. Like the table, that's me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the funny thing about shooting in Wales is, by law, you're not allowed to smoke on set indoors. So if it's indoors, it has to be an electronic cigarette, so they have, like, this whole system by which they make it look like a real cigarette, but it's an e-cigarette. It's the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen.
If you're outside, we had herbal cigarettes, so they look realistic. If you're indoors, we could have a herbal that was blocked, that was burning on the side.
With wax on the end.
So we
silliness.
We did not inhale. And then we had these hybrid ones, which... But you would end up doing this sort of strange sort of and turnover and action, and then they go action. You go as if it was the most natural thing in the world. We became smoking ninjas, and then there's the old cut, and we'd go for a real cigarette.
Yeah, that's true. Enough of this shit.
Yeah,
so funny. Yeah, so it was a whole production, quite literally dealing with all of the smoking in the movie, because it wasn't as simple as just lighting up cigarettes. It was a whole thing.
Yeah.
But there's something so great. I mean, we captured a little bit of the sort of romanticism, I think, of black and white cinema, 1950 America. Yeah. You know, everyone smokes. It catches the light in a certain way. I mean, there's something kind of iconic and romantic about that imagery, and it was fun to partake in that atmosphere.
There's a couple of moments when I see the movie, and like we're sitting on the boat and we're smoking, and I thought, I've always wanted to be in a movie like this.
Right?
Well, you know.
Yes.
Well, I just take it out myself going, here I am, smoking.
Yes.
Smoking in a movie.
It's great. It's great. If there's a novelty to it for some funny reason.
I know, it's hilarious.
Yeah, you get to smoke on film.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a challenge. Are there challenges besides the smoking e-cigarettes?
Oh, in this film, absolutely. I mean, we had 18 days to shoot this, which is no time considering, you know, how many. There's not a lot of characters. I mean, you know, a lot of people populate the world and come in and out of the story, but it's a lot of pieces and a lot of dialogue. And trying to encapsulate that within 18 days is a real struggle. And every day mattered. There wasn't an easy day. There wasn't a sort of, oh, we're only doing, like, pickups today.
Yeah.
Or there's no dialogue today. Like, that didn't exist. So every day we were shooting something imperative to the storytelling.
And there's a crucible of the story where there's a huge horror story. You know, the story, the horror stories section. And I don't know how many pages that scene was, 10, 12 pages.
Something like that, yeah.
And you were talking for the
yeah,
third
that
of them.
That shot's really long.
It's amazing. And he did it all.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. and we're in this log cabin, and it was always like, it was this thing coming, you know, it was like Omar Sharif coming over.
Before,
you know, this scene's coming, it's going to happen, here it comes, here comes
the looming on the mountain
here.
On the
yeah.
horizon.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
And then it happened, and it just worked, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Really
well, Shirley Henderson sort of started it off, and she was so extraordinary that it kind of inspired everything.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Kevin and Shirley just came in with this sort of energy. And
I felt like we were making another movie at that point, you know, because we were alone for quite a bit prior to them coming in, and then suddenly, like the characters in the film, brought this energy and this new life into this world. And it was very much like what the characters were experiencing, which was kind of wonderful.
So we were like in some sort of Bergman sitcom. That's what we felt like, where we were in, you know, two poets in a lodge. There's the episode where Shirley and Stanley come. There's the episode where they go to the diner. You know? We sort of latch onto people like driftwood. Oh, don't go, and they'd come. And but that, you know, that was for us. You know, such highlights that the spotlight would swing to these amazing ensemble that came to be part of this film. And Swansea is a small city in the south of Wales, and it is where Dylan Thomas is from. And it's, you know, you don't go to Swansea and think, hey, it's just like Manhattan. You know, it's not at all. But there are places in the film that Dylan used to go to. So the diner is a cafe that is still open 6 days a week, and it's where Dylan Thomas used to have his breakfast. The bar where Elijah had to drink the Guinness with the raw egg in it and stuff like that, that's a bar that Dylan used to drink in.
Mm.
So we've got these Dylan Thomas fingerprints, you know, throughout the film, which have added to it, so sort of richness to it. That we're sort of, you know, making a film about Dylan Thomas in Swansea, set in America, and now we're in America showing this film. It's kind of, you know, it keeps going so...
Do you know how many liberties they took, the writer director with the real story to make it work in a movie?
We wrote it very, very quickly. Yeah, and and it was taken from John Brennan wrote a book called Dylan Thomas in America, which was a count, and Elijah describes it as sort of almost like a first kiss and tell, which he's right, and he got a real hard time for writing that book. Because people just didn't really put a book out at the time. But there's this chapter, our film, sort of spans about 7.5 pages of that book, that's it. But when Andy Goddard who directed the film, and we co-wrote the script together, we saw the 7 pages of, you know, John bundling Dylan into a car and taking him to a log cabin and having a night with Shirley and Stanley and going to a diner. And then getting ready for Yale, we sort of thought it like a boxer and a trainer, you know. And we just thought that was so, it had everything. It had the whole America, John and Dylan story in that week. And we just thought that's a film we'd really like to make. The liberties are taken in that we use that chapter, and things happen in the film as they happen. And I suppose where we took liberties were just in the supporting characters. Where we thought, well, the type of person Dylan and John might have met. You know? So,
how did you guys prepare for your roles? Was there a lot of research done?
I ate a lot of cake, you know, and dyed my hair, because it was black and white. I dyed my hair like a ginger.
That's
and
right.
And blonde eyebrows, because if you put black and white, it looks very, very dark. And and like a monkey, I look like a monkey. Preparation was getting into the role, was kind of all the research and the writing, the creating, and the type of film we want to make, and then giving ourselves over to the process, and giving ourselves over to the actors so we get to work opposite, and then sort of picking up those sort of clues that kind of you get from research, and also I call them clues that Dylan left by the way he described himself, you know. So, you know, he called himself, he looked like an unmade bed, you know, and stuff like that. And his accent was Cambridge Welsh, too Welsh for the English, too English. So all these sort of things. So that was my preparation.
Mm. Yeah, and mine was kind of doing a little bit of research about John Malcolm Brennan, which turned up a lot of dead ends. There's not a lot of biographical information out there about the man, which in itself was very telling, ultimately. A very private individual, very buttoned up, didn't want a lot of attention, and I think probably increasingly so after the release of the book and kind of the reception that he received and sort of the negative reception that he received when he released a book that sort of told these sort of more tawdry tales of this man. And, you know, I think also in reading Dylan Thomas in America, you can glean a lot about who he was in as it pertains to his love of Dylan as well. So that, it was kind of... it was like the clues in the blanks was how I discovered who John was, funnily enough.
Yeah, because I remember you talking about reading that book and then asking those questions, why he wrote that book.
Mm.
And I suppose in those questions, that they were the clues,
right,
weren't they?
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Rather than that is the book. Because no film is a one-stop shop, you know.
Mm.
You know, and no book is a one-stop shop. This is just, you know, it's... You know, we were saying earlier, it's like that William Blake, see the world in a grain of sand, see eternity in an hour. It's about this sort of slice of life, this microcosm of two men at the probably apex of their relationship. We sort of think that, I mean, they were together for three other American trips after this movie, and John was very interesting.
And John went to Lon as well, and to Wales.
So they were together, but we think they probably weren't as close. I sort of feel like after this... the Yale thing, mm-hmm. John maybe protected himself a little bit more
mm-hmm.
from the whirlwind that is sort of Dylan. And John said, you say in the movie, you'd better get that train so you can go and terrorise somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And when we were writing the script, we thought, well, Dylan doesn't change. It's important that Dylan doesn't change. Dylan is Dylan. Dylan arrives as Dylan Thomas and he leaves as Dylan Thomas. But John, you know, not to be the man who quotes things all the time, but it's like that T.S. Eliot... Every man goes on a journey. When they arrive back from that journey, they'll be back where they started, but they will know the place for the first time.
Mm.
And for us, it was like John is back where he started, but he knows the place for the first time. He's ruffled, he's learned, he's been beaten up.
Foundation's been shaken.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that, you know, that was sort of vital for us.
Mm-hmm.
But... And I think you see that. You see that in Elijah's face at the end of the movie where, you know, you just look like a man who's learned. And,
you know, been through something.
Been through something. Been heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a great contrast in the opening shot of you. You're so buttoned up and, like, clean and, like, very put together. And that last shot of you, you finally, like, have stubble. Your hair is not slicked back and you're just, like... Like,
yeah.
I'm exhausted.
That's great.
You know, that was like really
in control,
awesome.
Out of control.
Yeah, great.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I suppose that was that's the price, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the price.
Yeah.
It's like you want to go, you want to stand closer to the sun, it's going to be hot. You know? You know. That's right. I love that description.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Not
can we change the poster?
So, Elijah, you've certainly come a long way in your career since Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
Looking back, do you have a favorite role or anything that stands out?
Oh, they all stand out for various reasons. You know, God, my life has been so extraordinary in all of the different experiences that I've had. And in some ways, the last 10 years of my life and the last 5 years of my life have been, in some ways, the most exciting and gratifying. That's a hard one, man. working in Barcelona with Eugenio Mira on Grand Piano is a real special experience for me. I love that film. I think Eugenio is a genius. Living in Barcelona, making incredible friends on that. The creative team was really special. So I have a real fondness for that experience. Lord of the Rings is probably one of the greatest life experiences I'll ever have. Nothing can really compare to that, nor will it ever. But but I also continue to be sort of surprised and at what is around the bend in life, you know. It's funny, the way I live life is not without, I don't live with any planning or I don't really look ahead too often, which makes life really exciting. because I don't have expectations. I only look to have experiences and to, you know, and that could be a variety of different things, not just specifically acting and film. And as a result, life tends to be very interesting because, you know, I'm sort of open to anything and new experiences.
Any other art forms, mediums that you want to get into?
I DJ on the side, you know, I play records and that's been very gratifying. I've been doing that. I've been, you know, involved and in love with music for a long, long time. But taking that more seriously and sort of traveling and grew up and doing that kind of thing.
I'm looking forward to the Elijah Wood directorial debut.
No, oh, I'm very much looking forward to that as well. Thank you.
It would be amazing. Yeah. I think it would be amazing at that moment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from all those more commercial experiences or, I don't know, blockbusters, whatever you call it, what made you decide to take on this project?
Yeah, well, I often don't really draw a distinction between the two worlds, even though there is a great distinction between the two worlds, because I'm just drawn to material. So that material is in a space that's not defined by its size. So I just am drawn to something that moves me, and that can be something on a large scale or on a small scale. And more often than not, I'm drawn to stories that tend to exist in the independent sphere because those are the kinds of stories that I, you know, you can take more risk. You can make a black and white movie about Dylan Thomas and John Malcolm Brennan, not so much, you know, in a major studio space. So it's risk and pushing things that tend to excite me more than playing it safe. And independent films tend to take those risks, so I'm more often than not drawn to that. But size has nothing to do with it, you know. If there was a film that came along that I was moved by and it happened to be large, then that's what that would be. Whatever it is to facilitate the story and the vision, whether on a small or large scale. And in some ways it's very different, and in some ways it's not different. You know, there are financial issues on a large scale too, and it's problem solving, and it's a group of people, like, you know, running into all sorts of issues and overtime and budgetary constraints, just as there are on independent films. The thing I do like, in some ways I prefer on an independent level, is that the teams tend to be smaller. So people are a little bit more easily unified, quite largely because it's a smaller team, and because everyone's there for that reason. No one's there to make money. There's a lot of money in independent cinema. So the people that are there, it's a great equalizer. They're all kind of there as equals looking to achieve this thing. And I like the energy around that. I find that exciting.
Can you talk about your current and upcoming projects?
Sure. So I did this film called The Trust with Nick Cage in February, which is a heist movie. We play two cops. Form a heist, and it was so much fun. I did a movie called Cooties that I also produced, and that's coming out in September. It's a horror comedy about a virus that affects children that haven't gone through puberty yet, turns them into savages, you know. That one's written by Lee Whannell, who created Saw and Insidious, and Ian Brennan. They co-wrote it. Ian Brennan co-created Glee, so it's the minds of Saw and Glee.
there's a love child.
Yeah. Wow. It's pretty awesome. Wow. Anyway, so it premiered not this last year, but the year prior at Sundance, and it's finally coming out in September, and we love it, and it's really funny. And the movie called The Last Witch Hunter, with Vin Diesel and Michael Caine and Rose Leslie, that comes out in October.
I was surprised to see that you were going to be working with Vin Diesel, because he does a different kind of movie than a lot of your movies. So
totally.
Yeah. So was it this movie in his typical genre? Or of, like, action guy, you know,
that's
macho?
That's interesting. I would say it's a hybrid of what you're familiar with in regards to Vin. Totally. But he's also a huge fantasy nerd. he talked to me at length about Tolkien and the Silmarillion and a character he wants to play in the Silmarillion. I'm like, wow, he's deep. He runs deep. And he loves D&D. He's a big Dungeons & Dragons fan.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. No, he's, awesome. That guy's like an old school nerd. So the movie in some ways is right. Like the environment of the film, it's about witches and how they're kind of all around us. And in some ways it speaks to that part of him. So that he probably hasn't gotten to articulate too much.
And so... We're
going to
fight. So, Celine, what are your next projects?
Celine, I quite like Celine. Call me Celine from now on. I should be singing the theme tune.
I can't
believe it. No! Listen, you are not the first person in my life to call me Celine. no, it's Kellen. But the... my next projects, I've got doing a couple of independent films in the UK. I'm going to do Kevin Allen's next movie, which is really good, which is a bit like Night of the Hunter.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I'm going to do that. And then I've got a script going to be Christopher Nyholm, directed The Killing, the Danish director. It's his first feature film, so I'm going to be doing that. So I'm really excited about that. And then I'm adapting a novel that's just come out as well. So there's a bit of writing and a mixture and kind of, you know, key. And I think that's it. I think I'm doing a comedy thing as well. I mean, you know, you're doing some cool stuff.
You're doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, man. Jerry Lewis is in that movie with you as well.
Yeah.
That's pretty
trust,
awesome.
Yeah. That's cool.
Wow. Jerry Lewis and Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, Jerry Lewis plays Nicolas Cage's dad.
That's amazing. It's
pretty awesome.
But yeah, I've got all kinds of... But the beautiful thing about Set Fire to the Stars is that out of it, we have this, you know, the company that made it, we're making other films together. So this really kind of family atmosphere that the producers... I absolutely trust and we're like family and...
Make movies with your friends.
Makes sense.
Really believe in
makes
that.
Makes sense. If you're gonna risk things, if you're gonna risk time and effort and money and really commit to something, then it's best to do it with the people that you really care about and you feel care about you as well. So that's been Set Fire to the Stars has been a great opportunity for me, because not only did I get to play the part that I've always wanted to play, but we got to do it in a film that we'd always wanted to make. I got to meet Elijah Wood and just act opposite this
Kellen.
Man. Yeah. And, you know, and that's just been one of the great gifts about this.
Oh, no.
And then from that, we have this sort of desire to keep, to be making more. So it's been...
It's really lovely.
Yeah, it's been great.
Been the birth of something else.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
What are some ideas of films that you might want to do together?
Together,
like what's next for you guys?
We'd love to do something together.
It'd be awesome.
You know, that would be great. I don't know. We should do something. We should do something funny.
We should do something funny.
Yeah.
Something maybe without this much dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a silent movie.
Maybe not as serious.
Maybe we should do like Buster Keaton and Fatty Arbuckle. You know, that's what we should do.
Why
be,
not Super Mario Brothers?
Hey! Which one am I?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. No, but I always think if you get a good thing going, then you should really, should stick to it. I mean, you know, Elijah's amazing. Yeah. Best actors I've ever worked with, but also a great guy, and we had such good fun making it. And I suppose when you do have a great experience, you want to have another one.
Mm.
I tell you what blew my daughter's mind. She came to the cinema in the UK, because the film's just been out in the UK, and on there were three posters outside the cinema, and it was, we were in the middle, Set Fire to the Stars, and Frozen, and Big Hero 6. And she went, Daddy, Elsa, Elijah, you, Baymax. Elsa. And she went back again. And that was the moment when she was like, her world went, this is crazy.
That's
this
amazing.
Is crazy. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Really kind of blew her mind.
Wow.
But no.
That's really cool.
Isn't life great? Yeah.
Mm.
So do you and Daniel Rad? Sorry, do you and Daniel Radcliffe get confused?
All the time. Really, really weird. It was a strange thing. I mean, you get it too.
Yeah, I get it too.
I mean, I was just too heavy for the broom. Otherwise, it could have been me.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Yeah.
Is it annoying?
No. I find it really funny. And sometimes it allows me to get away from, because if someone comes up and they say, you know, are you Daniel Radcliffe? And I'm like, no. And then I can just carry on. You know? It's great. Yeah. Like, I answered honestly. I'm not going to correct them. Because that would feel awkward.
That would be weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him about? Do you know each other?
No, I don't know him. I've met him, but I haven't.
Have
seen
you ever
him in years.
Signed an autograph as each other?
No, he has done as me.
Has he done
me? He has done as me. We've both independently talked about this phenomena because he gets me as well,
right.
Which is just very strange. I mean, I see it, and I don't see it. Mm. It's a funny one because I think we look very much like ourselves.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, seeing him, there's no mistaking it's Daniel Radcliffe to me. I don't know. I don't quite know how we've become this amorphous thing. You know,
people can't see.
We can't. Yeah. It's like face blindness.
They're like going, yeah, well, you've both got eyes.
Right. A little facial hair. Yeah. Right. We were in fantasy pictures, you know. Funny. Yeah.
I'll make a face off part two.
Right. Or we could do a buddy comedy or something together. It'd be hilarious. Finally! After decades!
Yeah. They're together at last.
Oh, God. Yeah. That sounds like a...
That would be funny.
Funny or die sketch waiting to happen.
Yeah. It'd be like...
It hasn't been done yet.
It'd be like mistaken identity, but neither of you look the same. That would be funny.
He was Frodo. He was Harry. They've been confused for each other. They're filmed together. Yeah. Minds are going to be blown. Yeah.
You go back home, try and live his life, and his girlfriend's just going, but you're not him.
It's literally a remake of Trading Places. Yeah. Or it's Freaky Friday.
Yeah.
Summer.
Yeah. Enemy.
Oh my God. Yeah. I can see it now.
I think you've just written the entire sketch.
I think
we should do that.
Just call Will. I'm sure it'll be fine.
There's your next project.
Yeah,
you totally are.
Play the butler.
Yeah, I'll be the butler.
Radcliffe Wood, which is which? Yeah.
Which is which?
Hey.
The witch switch.
Yeah.
It's rubbish.
Or is it brilliant?
Yeah. Who knows? Yes. Who knows? We can get there. Yeah. That would be funny. A mistaken identity film about people who don't look like
them. Yeah. Well, that's sort of akin to, like, Twins, you know?
Yeah, I was just thinking Twins. Yeah. Twins. Yeah. I was just thinking.
They're making a sequel to that, I think. Oh, Eddie Murphy is a triplet.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
Something should never be touched. Something should just never be touched. Yeah. And that is one of them.
I feel like that's something I hear on a daily basis. Right. They're making a sequel to that. They're doing a remake to that. Yeah. I wish that would... please stop.
Right.
What do you think about the TV shows that are happening now, like where they Hannibal, True Detective? Have you seen these shows?
True Detective's great.
Yeah, they're like movies now.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorites?
Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. True Detective was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I loved The Killing. TV's incredible. It's an exciting landscape because there's great storytellers, great actors, directors, writers that are moving to that space and just doing really interesting things. And The Killing's a good example, as is True Detective. True Detective specifically, because it's really taking a story and telling one story over the course of 8 or 9 episodes and letting it just be that. And then switching it up and telling a different story, which is wonderful.
Like
long-form storytelling that you couldn't you couldn't encapsulate it into a film, but it doesn't necessarily feel like a TV series either. It's like a long-form film. It's wonderful.
But it was something quite brilliant. I love Mad Men. I just loved it, and I was through it right to the end. And there was just those things that happened in that show where you go, wow, Peggy and Pete are in the same room and we all know something and everyone else doesn't know. It's like, kind of, you feel like a curtain twitching gossip, you know? It's just like you were in on all the stuff, and that was a real cool experience, I felt. But America has changed the game for television. It really has. It's just the I mean, if there is a problem, it's just that there are so many amazing shows out there. You go,
almost too much content.
Let's quit
now.
Work and just watch TV because it's all so. It's
about what you have to do to catch up.
I know, and you watch it and going, oh, I've got 8 episodes of that I've got to do, and because it's brilliant. It's consistently brilliant TV and storytelling.
Twin Peaks is coming back.
Is it?
Yeah, David Lynch is now back on as director. Yeah. Thank God they sorted that the fuck out.
Wow. I was really worried.
That was unbelievable.
I was like, no, don't do it if it's not him, because you can't.
Yeah, they
would. It's so iconic.
They
wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And X-Files is coming back for one more season.
They just started shooting like 3 days ago.
Yeah, I saw a photo of them on set. It looks great. It's great.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Pretty excited.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you connect with fans on Twitter, speaking of spending time stuff? Twitter, Facebook?
I'm on Twitter, yeah. Yeah.
I'll say hi.
It's great. Yeah. I love Twitter. I was really averse to it for a long time. I was on Facebook with a private account. And I just thought, I don't need to be on this medium for which everything I say can be sort of viewed by other people. And I had social media shyness, I suppose. And then I realized that it is brilliant. I've totally fallen in love with Twitter. I prefer Twitter to everything. And I don't really use it to write about things. Like, I don't write tweets, I don't write about my life or share anything personal. More than anything, I use it as a platform to support things that I think are great. You know, Kickstarter campaigns, films that I think people should see, music that I love, you know, some mild political things that I believe in. And it's fantastic, you know, for that. And the other thing that's brilliant about Twitter is that it cuts out a middleman, so that it's a great place for other artists to meet other artists and communicate. And this has happened to me so many times, where I've literally like been a part of a creative endeavor as a result of meeting on Twitter. You know, I was in a Flying Lotus video, and Flying Lotus asked me to do it via Twitter, and I ended up, like, I'd never spoken to anyone on the phone. It was all email and Twitter communication, and they were like, I hope he shows up to the shoot. Like, because no one had actually spoken to me. I just said I was in and provided it. And we ended up shooting this really beautiful video.
In 21 characters.
but honestly, it's great in that regard too. It's a coming together of people sharing ideas.
Do you find it? I find it more of a positive space than a negative space. Twitter.
I think so.
You know? I mean, there can be a lot of negative there, but actually, I find it really positive.
I find Facebook to be more negative, honestly.
Yeah, because
people complaining
so
and ranting about their grievances.
Yeah. Of tiny grievances.
The ridiculous grievances.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't you just hate COVID?
It's either that or it's, it's all the videos. Like, check this out. BuzzFeed, fuck it.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Girls on Film. I'm your host, Liz Whittemore. I'd like to give a big shout out and thank you, as always, to our amazing producer, Melissa Hansen. Set Fire to the Stars opens Friday, June 12th in New York at the Village East, with a nationwide rollout in major cities June 19th. Set Fire to the Stars will also be released nationwide July 21st on DVD, VOD, digital platforms, and iTunes. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Girls on Film.